Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Quantum Intellectual Property 2018 full year results call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There'll be a presentation followed by a question and answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone. Must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, Wednesday, the 29th of August, 2018. I would now like to hand the conference over to your first speaker today, Mr. Leon Allen, Managing Director and CEO for Quantum Intellectual. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Good morning, and thank you for joining Quantum Intellectual Property Limited's 2018 full year results call. I have with me Martin Cleaver, Quantum's Chief Financial Officer, who'll speak to the financial results as part of the presentation a little later. I'd like to start with an overview of our first full year as a listed company, and if you turn to slide five, you can follow along. Our EBITDA for the year was within the guidance range at 20.1 million dollars. Overall, the group experienced a stronger second half performance following a weaker weakness as reported in the first half. Trademark and legal revenues over the year grew, partially offsetting a decline in patent revenue for the year. Pleasingly, the second half showed positive trends in patents, with revenues increasing over the first half and Australian patent applications up 12% on the first half, significantly outperforming the market. The total group patent applications for the year were down 0.6%, reflecting that initial weakness in the first half of 2018. The Australian patent applications were down 6.2%, but the PCT applications are up 19.8% to a record level. Our Asian applications were slightly down, mainly due to a high level of transferred cases in the previous year, and the rest of Asia grew. Patent applications filed by Quantum in the rest of the world were up some 13.7%, and we've also had an exciting year in the latter part of the year, making acquisition of a Malaysian firm, Advanced Fidelis, which was finalized on the 2nd of July. We've continued to work within the business to achieve further internal alignment and retention of employees and progress the career advancement through promotions that I'll talk about later. A primary focus, of course, has been on revenue generation through increased marketing efforts and business development investment. We've maintained our low levels of debt and strong balance sheet. The next slide is a financial summary, and I'll leave it to Martin later to go through that in some detail, but just to highlight a few things, and in particular, that all the metrics show a significant improvement in the second half following setbacks in patents in the revenues in the first half of the year. As a result of that, the EBITDA after effects was up 13.8% for the second half. Cash flow is strong, and our debt remains modest, allowing us to make a dividend payment of 90% of NPATA by way of a final dividend of 0.043, and that represents a total dividend for the year of 0.071, which is fully franked. If we turn to the next slide, we can show you a little bit about the market and, in particular, the revenue trends over the past 3 years. We've given that to you on slides eight by way of both a yearly trend and a half-year trend. We show the half-year trend because of the just to illustrate the recovery that we've seen in the second half, which has been very strong and very pleasing. As I said, the revenue declined by 4.3% compared to last year, but showed a 6.3% increase in the second half. The trademark revenue increased 5.9% year-on-year, and the legal litigation revenue improved by 7.9%. The second half trademark revenue actually represented something like 15.8% increase over the first half. There was a slight decrease in the legal and litigation revenue after a very, very strong first half. In slide nine, we show you the service charge components of the revenue across the business. Patents remains the strongest at 69%. The year-on-year change was down 3%, driven by that earlier lower level of incoming overseas work. Trademark charges now represent 19% of the overall service charge, and legal litigations 13%. We have got a summary now going on page 10 of the graphs that we illustrate the performance of the patents and trademark patents in on slides 11 and 12. And just the highlights of those, you'll see that this market of Australian patent applications was down very slightly for FY18. Quantum Australian patent applications were down 6.2% year on year. However, there was a 12% increase, as I mentioned, in the second half. The second half patent applications were in line with the second half of the prior comparable period of 2017. Market share for Quantum, as you'll see on the right-hand side, decreased to 13.8% for the financial year, but was strongly influenced by that weak first half and rebounded to 14.3% in the second half. Turning to 12, just the overall group patent applications were stable or down very slightly at 0.6% down in FY18. That's the right-hand graph on page 12. The PCT applications were at a record 19.8%, as I mentioned before. That's represented by the red in that graph. And on the left-hand side, you'll see that the Asian applications were down 9.3%. That's largely influenced by the fact that last year and indeed the year before, there were quite a few takeover cases in those offices. We've now stabilised, and I think back to sort of business as normal, as it were. There was also a growth of 13% in the rest of Asia. Looking at the trademark applications on slide 13, you'll see that there's been a very solid performance by Quantum. The trademark filings were up 3% for the year, and there's a very strong relative performance. Turning over the page, the New Zealand filings, Singapore filings and Malaysian filings are all been very, very impressive. New Zealand up some 20%, Singapore up 136%, and nearly threefold increase in Malaysia. Our legal and litigation business, as I indicated before, has been performing well with a 7.5% increase in revenue to $9.6 million. The DCC law firm was recently recognised in a federal court report showing cases filed for 2017. They're a little slow in putting these out, but pleasingly that showed that DCC law filed the largest number of IP cases in the country, which is a very, very significant achievement. A recent highlight for DCC law has been the recruitment of a corporate legal team, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later. At this point, I'd ask Martin to give us an overview of the financial.
Thanks, Leon. Good morning, everyone. Page 17 shows the underlying profit and loss statement for the year. Comparative pro forma numbers have been adjusted for the significant IPO and other listing costs. Underlying current year numbers adjust for material one-off items, including restructuring costs, business acquisition costs, and one-off employee incentive payments. As we've discussed, the service charge revenue of $76.5 million is 4.9% down against the prior year, whilst total revenue is down 1.5%. As noted at the half, this drop was all in the Australian patent business and mainly in the first half. Second half saw a stabilising of patent revenue and growth in associate charges revenue, giving a total revenue increase for the second half of 6.7%. Partially offsetting the patent revenue drop was good performances by the trademark and legal businesses, as mentioned, showing growth of 2.7% and 7.5% respectively. Trademark service fee revenue growth in the second half was a very strong 10.7%. Legal revenue dropped slightly in half two off a very strong first half performance. Whilst we saw good growth in associate charge revenue for the year, once recoverable expenses were netted off, there was a slight decline in margin. This occurred mainly due to some high volume work where on-charge fees were capped. The Asia operating segment is also growing in line with our expectations, with double-digit patent service fee growth and the trademark business making a small profit in its first full year of operation. Looking at costs, operating expenses of $61.1 million were 1% below the prior year. Staff costs declined marginally from the prior year. There was some benefit in the second half of the restructuring program initiated at the end of the first half. This benefit was partially offset by the impact of the lateral hires coming on during the year and employee incentive programs for non-vendor principals established during the year. Other costs totaling $10.7 million include items such as technology costs, travel, marketing, and bad debts. During the year, savings in technology costs plus a lower bad debt expense were offset by increases in marketing and travel relating to BD activities. Underlying EBITDA for the year was $20.1 million, down from $24.5 million in the prior year. Depreciation and amortization expenses are constant, and there was a reduction in interest expenses. Average borrowing volumes were lower. Whilst the EBITDA margin is down year on year, the second half saw an improvement of 12.6% over the first half. Moving on to slide 18, this shows the cash flow characteristics of the business. Cash from operating activities was $11.3 million, down from the prior year, but still reflecting a high cash conversion rate. Higher income tax payments and restructuring expenditure impacted the net operating cash flow. CapEx spend is in the range that we expect and mainly relates to IT refresh programs, IT infrastructure, and office fit-out expenditure. Our borrowing levels are paid down whenever possible. Dividends paid are higher than the prior year, and the payout ratios have been. The next slide shows the group's balance sheet is strong and provides capacity for future growth. Net debt of $8.3 million is up from $7.4 million at 30 June 17, but gearing remains at low levels. There's plenty of capacity in the banking facilities, and all banking covenants are well below requirements. The debtor book is of high quality with minimal write-offs or provisions required. The strong cash position means that we're able to declare a final dividend 90% of NPATA, as Leon mentioned, up from 80% at the previous year end. Finally, slide 20 contains the statutory underlying profit reconciliation and shows the impact of the restructuring and business acquisition costs, share-based payments, and one-off employee incentive payments for the year. I'll now hand back to Leon to cover business initiatives and priorities.
Thank you, Martin. For those following along, I'm at slide 22 or page 22. Our business initiatives, firstly, we told you at the half year about reconfiguration and cost initiatives. We've implemented those during the course of the last 6 months. And expect to gain the full benefit of those during the course of the 2019, subject to some reinvestment we'll be making to hopefully grow revenue. In as much as the post-IPO reconfiguration efficiencies that we've talked about at length are concerned, we've largely dealt with most of those or implemented most of those, although there will be incremental improvements as we move forward. We are increasing our investment in revenue generation. As Martin mentioned, we've hired new lateral teams. We've continued to hire marketing and business development expenditure into 2019 to drive revenue growth. Along the way, this year we've promoted 7 new principals and made the 2 lateral recruitments we've referred to in the principal group. Since listing, we've now appointed 12 new principals. We've also been working on and implementing arrangements for incentivising and retaining our professionals. And this effectively involves incentive payments to new principals to incentivise them and retain them. And in that regard, we've established an employee share trust that provides a vehicle for us to make those share-based payments. In this year, we've had 40 internal promotions, recognising the development of our professional staff. And that entailed 65% representation by females. Our year-on-year operating expenses are expected to be relatively stable. As I mentioned earlier, we have recently made an acquisition of Advance Fidelis in Malaysia. Advance is a well-established IP firm, somewhat similar in characteristic, although smaller than Davies Colson Cave, in that it provides services across the range of IP, patents, trademarks, industrial designs, and advisory services in each of those areas. It has 19 fee-generating professionals and a fairly diverse geographic spread of revenue. The Malaysian portion of that, or what's derived from Malaysia, is around 32%. Our rationale in making that acquisition is to expand our position in Southeast Asia, which is would be no surprise and something we're working on for a while, to build on that presence that we've had in Singapore now for 3 years. It enables us to consolidate the work from the Quantum Group that's sent from Australia and to leverage the relationships that Quantum has in other jurisdictions into that Malaysian market. So our priorities are with that new business are to integrate the service offering, particularly with our for our DCC and FPA clients, and to market the capabilities of Advance to advanced clients of Quantum's capabilities in Australia, New Zealand and Singapore. That transaction, as mentioned, was finalised 2 July with an initial payment of just over $3 million. And there is subject to an earn-out over the next 18 months. Other initiatives that we've taken are the recruitment of 2 lateral teams, one into DCC and one into FPA. The DCC lateral team involved a energetic team of trademark professionals that have joined the Sydney office, and for FPA's energetic team of patent professionals that have joined the Melbourne office of FPA. DCC Law has recruited a new corporate legal team with effect from 1st of July, and that expands the range of services provided by DCCL to include corporate and private advisory services, mergers and acquisitions, tax and property services. The rationale here is that we have observed a need, particularly for overseas-based clients, for those types of services in Australia, and previously that work has been referred out. We now have the capability to do that in-house and generate the corresponding revenue. Marketing and business development remains a focus. We've increased the marketing budget following further from the 2018 increase. The lead times in that are typically long. However, we have observed some traction in recent times, and I think that our recovery in the second half is in part, and our performance in the market is in part due to the efforts that we've been making in that area. But it's very, very difficult to make an exact one-to-one correlation. On the growth, the previously mentioned integration of the Malaysian business with DCC and FPA will increase that work available. And FPA will be establishing in the short term a Singapore office to complement DCC present in Singapore. We've also recruited our first in-country New Zealand attorney to service the needs of our clients in New Zealand and elsewhere. Quantum has around 10% of market share in New Zealand from the Australian base, and we now have a local presence. Turning finally to our priorities, not surprisingly, those are revenue generation. That will be through our continued process of targeted marketing and further new marketing initiatives and acquisition opportunities where they become available. We'll continue to build the Southeast Asian presence, utilising the FPA and DCC client connections through those offices, integrate the Advance Fidelis with Quantum client relationships, and continue to develop the career progression of our key professionals to improve and enhance the current depth of IP expertise and service offering that we have within the group. We'll also continue our focus on business efficiency and alignment of our internal capabilities to the market development. Thank you very much. We'll now move to questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question today, please press star followed by 1 on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the pound or hash key. Your first question today comes on the line of Sam Haddad from Bell Potter Securities. Please ask your question.
Good morning, Leon. Good morning, Martin. And well done on the improved performance in the second half.
Thank you, Sam. Good morning.
Just wanted to talk about the cost restructure program which you announced in your February update, you called out 0.9 million benefit this second half, an incremental 3 million dollar for FY 2019. So it sounds like that incremental 3 million dollar is now being offset by increased investment. Is that right?
That's correct, Sam. We've looked at, you know, our need to generate revenue and how we're going to do that. And as I said before, the part of that is our lateral recruitments and increased business development expenditure. And also, we are investing in our team, in our professionals, and in the incentive payments to the new non-vendor principals in the business.
Yeah, because at the time, I did ask whether that 3 million was going to sustain growth in the business, and I thought that was going to be, there was no need for reinvestment. But it sounds like you're investing back into staff again. So I was just a little confused in that respect.
Yeah. Look, Sam, the bottom line is, you know, this is a people business. We can only run a really good business if we've got really good people. We've got to have the best people, and we've got to retain them, and we have to compete in the marketplace. So we've indeed used some of our savings to reinvest in that area, but also don't ignore the, and some of that investment extends, of course, to those laterals. That's an investment. We haven't really allowed for much return on that yet.
Yeah.
Also that the, you know, we are in a competitive world where we really need to aggressively market them and do our business development.
Yeah. In terms of the marketing initiative, what typically is the lead time between your increase in marketing spend before that translates to a revenue benefit?
I don't think I can answer that empirically. The issue is that there are various different types of marketing, and some of them have a shorter lead time than others. I mean, we have, you know, sort of reputational development marketing, which, you know, is very hard to pin back to, you know, an event that you do that actually translates to work. It's often difficult to know whether one of the several hundred people in the audience you're speaking to subsequently files a patent application because you impressed them in delivering that presentation. We do get a bit better measure on some of the shorter-term initiatives where we actually target clients and, you know, make a pitch, if you like. Those tend, however, not to be as short-term as you might think, because very often you need to wait for the next opportunity for that work to go out to tender or for it to be reviewed. So I'm not answering the question, I know, Sam, but it's a very, very difficult question to answer. You've got to be talking in terms of years and at least, and perhaps longer.
Yeah. So I suppose you've given guidance that operating expenses will be flat next year on this year, rather than a 3% incremental benefit than previously expected. Is that the conclusion?
Yeah.
What you said?
That's correct, Sam. So in an organic business, obviously, that excludes acquisition costs, but in the existing business, yes, we're expecting fairly flat year-on-year costs.
Yeah. Well done on recapturing the market share in the second half. So what actually was driving that, do you think?
I wish I could say exactly. I could speculate. We did reduce our marketing expenditure the year before. You might recall we were in, you know, in the prospectus forecast year. We were trying to contain costs. I think that what you're seeing, to some extent at least, but it's only a think, is a reflection of the increased marketing effort we've been making since, you know, around July last year.
Right. So there's opportunity for a short-term marketing benefit to revenue, it sounds like, as well.
Well, it seems like it, but you know, the market, the whole market has come up a bit. We've come up better than that. But, as I've said before, the difficulty is that it's not a one-to-one relationship. There's a variation across the client group that you have at any particular time, and, you know, it's very hard to draw that one-to-one line between the marketing efforts and the return. It's frustrating, but, you know, it's a fact of life.
So the new baseline, is it fair to assume the 10.7 as a half-year run rate for our forecasting in FY 2019, rather than the first half run rate?
That's our hope. Sam, how fair it is, I don't know. I'm a little gun-shy, to be honest. I mean, we sat here this time last year saying we expected, you know, more or less a historical run rates and had a pretty disappointing first half. It's come back nicely in the second half, but I think the old saying, one swallow does not a spring make, needs to be observed, and all indicators are good for us, but we've got to deliver.
And how's July and August looking? Is that encouraging?
July was encouraging, Sam. Certainly hit our expectations in terms of our July budget. I don't have a view on August as of yet, but July was certainly a good month for us.
And was quarter four better than quarter three? I know there's obviously seasonality, so one would expect that would be the case. So
yeah, it was.
And just on the escrow release, that's coming out on the 31st, from memory.
That's correct.
And just any feel for what you think will be, how that's going to be managed, or what you think in terms of appetite to sell and not to sell?
I can't speak for the other shareholders. I can tell you that it was our plan to look at an extension of the voluntary escrow and a managed sell down over a period of time. That was consistent with what the shareholders wanted to do. Unfortunately, there's legal advice out there based on the ANZ cartel case that tells us that is not something that one should do, and so we were unable to proceed with that. But you can make of that as you will in terms of reflecting what the intentions of the vendor principals are.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. Thanks for your time.
No problem. Thank you.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question today, it is star one on your telephone. Hi, Susan, we have no further questions online at this time.
In the absence of any further questions, thank you all very much for listening in, and look forward to reporting again at the half year.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. We thank you all for your participation. You may now disconnect.